Hi everyone, I'm Stephen Reisner, and this is Madness, where psychology and capitalism collide.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
I'm speaking to you today from New York City, the birthplace of America's two great populists, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. And I'll be focusing on what I consider to be the most important political issue facing the country right now. And I'm not talking about the impeachment process, although I will be speaking about that process in what I have to say, but I am referring specifically to an even more important question, the question of what is truth and what is a lie, where politics and politicians are concerned. I will explore the psychology of lying and its relationship to ethics, politics, populism, and the future of our democracy. Our country has finally embarked on impeachment proceedings because, at least according to the popular press and the Democratic leadership, Donald Trump has told an enormous lie. And what was that lie? What was the lie that crossed the line for congressional Democrats? It is Trump's claim that the Bidens were involved in corruption and in a conspiracy to hide that corruption. And that Donald Trump attempted to coerce a foreign leader to perform a public investigation into the Bidens' alleged corruption at a time when Joe Biden was Trump's strongest opponent in the campaign for his reelection. Now, many of us believe that Trump has been violating our Constitution and committing impeachable offenses from the first day of his presidency. So the question that must be asked is, why now do the Democrats in Congress believe that Trump has gone too far? I suspect, and this is what today's show will be about, I suspect that it's not the lies that Trump tells, but the truth embedded in Trump's lies, and especially in this whopper of a lie that has sparked so much outrage and prompted this impeachment process now. I suspect that aside from the obvious aim of impeaching a dangerous and corrupt president, this impeachment process has another aim, perhaps even more dangerous to our democracy, which is to make sure we focus on Trump's lies and not the truth embedded in those lies. Lies directing to the truth, exposing lies in order to obscure the truth, sounds like madness. It goes without saying that Donald Trump is the biggest liar ever to hold the office of the presidency. He's probably the biggest liar ever to hold any political office. And you don't have to take my word for it. The Washington Post has been documenting Donald Trump's false and misleading statements since day one. And what they found was that in the first 100 days of his presidency, Donald Trump told 492 lies. That's an average of 5 lies a day. And it increased exponentially. By the 1,000th day of his presidency, which has just passed, the post clocked 13,435 false and misleading statements. I believe we can say that Donald Trump has created an executive branch where a culture of lying is dominant. In fact, when asked about the president's lies, Kellyanne Conway gave a response worthy of a philosophy class. She said, quote, "The president has said that he has not lied," which of course makes 13,436. But I don't believe that the country is split apart because some believe the president is lying and others believe he's telling the truth. I would say the country is split between those who believe the president is lying and those who don't care that the president is lying. We might even say that the country is split between those who are outraged at the president's lies and those who love the fact that the president lies. So to understand the function of the president's lies in our democratic process, I would like to take a look at the understanding of lies and the psychology of lying that psychoanalysis offers. And I'd like to start by talking about the lies of children, and in particular, the impact of a child's first lie. Why do I want to focus on the first lie? Because the first lie is the first experience of a person's consciousness where they understand that they have an internal world, a mind that is separate from other people's internal worlds, from their parents, from those in authority, who they thought knew everything. This has enormous consequences on our relationships with others and on what we think of as a conscience. So, I'll tell three stories of first lies, and I will begin with a bit of self-psychoanalysis and tell the story of my own first lie. Okay, here goes. I was 4 years old and visiting my best friend Amy, who was also 4 years old. She lived in an apartment one flight above my apartment in Brooklyn. And Amy had a new toy, which I immediately fell in love with. It was called Silly Putty, and it came in a plastic egg. Okay, I'll leave aside the psychoanalysis of a toy that comes in an egg. But nonetheless, I thought this substance was miraculous. You could pull it slowly and it would stretch. You could pull it fast and it would break. You could flatten it out. You could press it against a comic book. And when you peeled it off, the image from the comic book was then on the Silly Putty, which you could then stretch and stretch the image. This was wonderful stuff. I loved it so much that I coveted Amy's Silly Putty. And when we moved on to play with something else, I took the Silly Putty and I put it in my pocket. A little while later, it was time for me to go home. And I put my hand in my pocket and discovered that the Silly Putty had melted all over the inside of my pocket. And I started to cry and cry and cry. Amy's mother heard me crying and came running in, and I showed her the melted Silly Putty inside my pants pocket. She was kind and reassuring and told me everything would be okay. She went and got a knife and started to scrape the inside of my pocket, scrape the Silly Putty out of it, and told me all the while not to worry. It wouldn't be a problem. And while she's being so caring and compassionate, I am realizing that she had no clue that I was planning to steal that silly putty. She simply thought that I was just a little kid and I thoughtlessly had put the silly putty in my pants pocket. And so, there I was, left all alone with the knowledge that I had wanted to steal that silly putty, that I was really a thief. And this started this mental process in me, since I understood now that I could lie to people, I had to decide for myself, what kind of a person did I want to be? Did I want to get away with something? Did I want to lie? And if I lied, why? I would go so far as to say that my ethical explorations to this day can be traced all the way back to the effects of that silly putty experience. Okay, let me turn now to a second example of a first lie. This one comes from a famous paper by Sigmund Freud entitled Two Lies Told by Children. It's a similar story, but it ends very differently. Here's the story as Freud wrote it. A girl of 7, in her second year at school, had asked her father for some money to buy colors for painting Easter eggs. Her father had refused, saying he had no money. Shortly afterwards, the girl asked her father for some money for a contribution toward a wreath for the funeral of their reigning princess who had recently died. Each of the school children was to bring 50 pfennigs to class. Her father gave her 10 marks. She paid her contribution, put 9 marks on her father's writing table, and with the remaining 50 pfennigs, bought some paints which she hid in her toy cupboard. At dinner, her father asked suspiciously what she had done with the missing 50 pfennigs and whether she had not bought paints with them after all. She denied it, but her brother, who was 2 years her elder and with whom she had planned to paint the eggs, betrayed her. The paints were found in the cupboard. The angry father handed the culprit over to her mother for punishment, and it was severely administered. Afterwards, her mother was herself much shaken when she saw how great the child's despair was. She caressed the little girl after the punishment and took her for a walk to console her. But the effects of the experience, which were described by the patient herself as the turning point in her life, proved to be ineradicable. Up to then, she had been a wild, self-confident child. Afterwards, she became shy, timid, and afraid of breaking the rules. I find this story so poignant, because here is this wild, self-confident girl who basically caught her father in a lie. She knew he was being hypocritical when he said in one instance that he had no money, and in the next instance, he gave her 20 times what she asked for. I would say that she thought she was playing his game when she gave him back 9 marks and spent the 50 pfennigs on paints. I imagine she hoped that her father would laugh because she was, in effect, saying to him, "You see, you had the money all along." And so, when she was severely punished, she was shocked to learn that the rules were arbitrary and based on authority and not fairness. She came away from that experience with a terrible fear of breaking rules, even if she didn't know why they existed, even if the one who enforces the rules is hypocritical. She became shy and timid and afraid of judgment. Now, I'd like to tell the story of a third child. This story was told to me by a patient in a drug rehab whose father was the CEO of a local financial institution. When this boy was in second grade, he was caught stealing lunch money from a classmate, and he had bought himself some snacks and sweets with the money. Another classmate saw him steal the money and reported it to the teacher. When he was confronted by the teacher, he started to cry, and he admitted the crime. The teacher called the boy's parents and asked them to deal with the child's theft. And when the child got home, his father was angry. But he was not angry because the child had committed a theft. He castigated the boy for getting caught. "If you're going to steal," his father said, "make sure no one sees you. And if you do get caught, deny it and dare them to prove it." So, here are three first lies, each having a very different psychological outcome. The first child, in this case, me, developed a strong conscience. In Freudian terms, this might be called the ego ideal, the self-questioning of what kind of a person do I aspire to be and what kind of a person do I not want to be. If such a person lies, there needs to be a good reason for it. The girl with the paints also developed a strong conscience, but hers was a punitive one, what Freud would call a harsh superego. Her standards were external and authoritarian. She would be afraid to lie for fear of getting caught and punished. But the third child, who was taught from an early age that the only standards to consider are power and personal gain, and any means to those ends are justified? Well, we might say that such a child does not develop a conscience at all. Such a child lies strategically without any internal conflict. I think it's fair to conclude that a man who lies 13,435 times in his first 1,000 days in office belongs to this third category. He has no conscience whatsoever. And yes, that alone is grounds for impeachment. But I don't believe that Donald Trump became president of the United States only because he knows how to tell lies, only because of the way he manipulated and aroused the American people with lies. I believe that what makes Trump different from your run-of-the-mill sociopath is his ability to wield the truth in exactly the same way.
That's what. And by the way, let me just tell you, we need the tickets. You can't get them. You know who has the tickets for the? I'm talking about to the television audience, donors, special interest, the people that are putting up the money. So it is. The RNC told us we have all donors in the audience, and the reason they're not loving me. The reason they're not loving me is I don't want their money. I'm going to do the right thing for the American public. I don't want their money. I don't need their money. And I'm the only one up here that can say that.
Trump has an extraordinary ability to identify people's weaknesses and especially their hypocrisy. You might say that all bullies are like that, but bullies go after the weak. And in that way, Trump is certainly a bully. But Trump also brazenly goes after the strong, ferreting out their weaknesses and hypocrisies and using their hypocrisy to humiliate them. That instinct of his is why, when the audiences for The Apprentice began to flag, he created Celebrity Apprentice, so the audience could see the rich and famous, the smug, the powerful, being knocked down. That's exactly how he humiliated and defeated 16 Republican rivals and won the Republican nomination. And it's how he defeated Hillary Clinton. I would say that Trump's genius is that he drew upon his ruthless, instinctive ability to zero in on weakness and hypocrisy and applied it to America itself. Trump exposed American hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of pretending to be democratic and egalitarian when the rich and powerful hold all the cards and the deck is stacked against everybody else. Trump's genius is that he has exposed the terrible secret of American government in the 21st century. And that secret is that democracy has become a cover story for what is really a corporatocracy, a system rigged in favor of the rich, where politicians are bought and sold, wars are created for profit, and government and corporate leaders regularly and consistently lie to the people.
Nobody knows the system better than me.
And in being so brazenly honest about the American system, Trump convinced his followers that the only one who was not a hypocrite was Trump himself. Why? Because he understands corruption. Because he acknowledges his own corruption. He himself is the king of corruption, and he simply refuses to pretend otherwise. Trump doesn't secretly take money and pretend his hands are clean, like the Bidens, or the Bushes, or the Clintons. When Trump gets enriched during his presidency, when Trump asks for dirt on his opponents, when he cheats on his taxes, when he enriches his family, he is doing it in broad daylight. And he claims, in a sense, he's doing it on behalf of all the little people in the country who hate the hypocritical politicians who claim to be honorable but are doing exactly the same thing. In Plato's Republic, Socrates talks of the place of the noble lie in politics. The noble lie is the lie that a leader must sometimes tell his people when it is necessary to achieve a greater good. Trump offers his people the opposite. Trump sometimes tells the truth, a truth that no one else will acknowledge, but he does it strategically for power and for his own personal gain. We might call Trump's truth the ignoble truth, a truth told for the greater evil. The question is, will we, in our attempt to get rid of Trump's evil, get rid of the truth he has exposed at the same time? Will we blame the condition of America's democracy on Trump so that we can go back to reassuring ourselves that the system isn't rigged, that politicians aren't crooked, that money doesn't rule our government, and that there is nothing corrupt about the son of the vice president being paid over $1 million by foreign companies, since, after all, no law was violated? The dirty little truth that Trump has shown us is that, okay, maybe we didn't have a broken law, but we have a broken system. Trump is an embarrassment for the American system because he is the system. He is the America in which only the very wealthy, the biggest corporations, and foreign governments have a real vote. He is the America where influence is funneled not through the ballot box, but through enormous secret campaign contributions, through donations to personal foundations, and through lucrative contracts for politicians and their family members. He is the America where corruption empowers. So really, right now, we have two choices. We can try with the Democrats and the mainstream press to put the genie back in the bottle. Or we can take to the streets, like the people are doing today in Hong Kong, in Beirut, in Santiago, in Baghdad, and we can demand fundamental change to our system of government. As I see it, the most important issue facing us all in America today is not whether Trump is impeached, but whether we make use of or squander the opportunity that Trump has given us to see the truth about America and to be willing, in good conscience, to change it. This is Stephen Reisner, and you've been listening to Madness, where psychology and capitalism collide.